least they'd had time to remove the dead and care for their wounded. There it had been a matter of standing firm and holding against waves of attacks. Here there was no time to wait, no time to think. Aerith sat down on the ground beside his stump, and he put a hand on her shoulder. She closed her eyes and leaned against him. She was beautiful, with perfect ears and wonderful eyebrows. Loyal did not look at the bloodstains on her clothing. He feared some of it was hers. He rubbed her shoulder with fingers so tired he could barely feel them. Loyal had taken some notes on the battlefield, for himself and for others, to keep track of how the battle had gone so far. Yes, a final attack. That would make for a good ending to the story, once he wrote it. He pretended that he would still write the story. There was no harm to such a little lie. One rider burst from the ranks of their soldiers, galloping toward the Trolloc right flank. Matt would not be happy about that. One man alone would die. Loyal was surprised that he could feel sorrow for that man's life lost, after all of the death he had seen.
"That man looks familiar,"
Loyal thought. Yes, it was the horse. He'd seen that horse before many times.
"Lan,"
he thought, numb.
"Lan is the one riding out alone."
Loyal stood. Aerith looked up at him as he shouldered his axe.
"Wait,"
Loyal said to her.
"Fight alongside the others. I must go."
"Go?"
"I need to witness this,"
Loyal said. The fall of the last king of the Melchieri. He would need to include it in his book.
"Prepare to charge," Arganda yelled. "Men, form up. Archers at the front, cavalry next. Foot soldiers, prepare to come up behind."
A charge, Tam thought. Yes, that is our only hope. They had to continue their push, but their line was so thin. He could see what Matt had been trying, but it wasn't going to work. They needed to fight it through anyway. "Well, he is dead," a mercenary said from near Tam, nodding toward Lan Mandragoran as he rode toward the Trolloc flank. "Bloody borderlanders!"
"Tam,"
Abel said from beside him. Above them, the sky grew darker. Was that possible at night? Those terrible, boiling clouds seemed to come lower and lower. Tam almost lost Lan's figure atop the midnight stallion, despite the bonfires burning on the heights. Their light seemed feeble.
"He's riding for Dimandred," Tam thought. "But there's a wall of Trollocs in the way."
Tam took out an arrow with a resin-soaked rag tied behind the head and knocked it into his bow.
"Two rivers, men! Prepare to fire!"
The mercenary nearby laughed.
"That's 100 paces at least. You'll fill him with arrows, if anything."
Tam eyed the man, then took his arrow and thrust the end into a torch. The bundled rag behind the head came alight with fire.
"First rank! On my signal!"
Tam yelled, ignoring the other orders that came down the line.
"Let's give Lord Mandragoran a little something to guide his way."
Tam drew in a fluid motion, the burning rag warming his fingers, and loosed. Lan charged toward the Trollocs. His lance and his 3 replacements had all shattered hours ago. At his neck he wore the cold medallion that Berylaine had sent through the gateway with a simple note.
"I do not know how Galad ended up with this, but I believe he wished me to send it to Cawthon."
Lan did not consider what he was doing. The void did not allow such things. Some men would call it brash, foolhardy, suicidal. The world was rarely changed by men who were unwilling to try being at least one of the 3. He sent what comfort he could to distant Nynaeve through the bond, then prepared to fight. As Lan neared the Trollocs, the beast set up a spear line to stop him. A horse would impale itself trying to push through that. Lan drew in breath, calm within the void, planning to slice the head off the first spear, then ram his way through the line. It was an impossible maneuver. All the Trollocs would need to do was squeeze together and slow him. After that, they would overwhelm Mandarb and pull Lan from the saddle. But someone had to destroy Demandred. With the medallion at his neck, Lan raised his sword. A flaming arrow streaked down from the sky and hit the throat of the Trolloc right in front of Lan. Without hesitation, Lan used the fallen Trolloc as an opening in the line of spears. He crashed through the shadow spawn, trampling the fallen one. He would need to... Another arrow fell, dropping a Trolloc. Then another and another, in quick succession. Mandarb crashed through the confused, burning and dying Trollocs as an entire rain of burning arrows dropped in front of him.
"Malkir!"
Lan yelled, healing Mandarb forward, trampling corpses but maintaining speed as the way opened. A hail of light dropped before him, each arrow precise, killing a Trolloc that tried to stand before him. He thundered through the ranks, shoving aside dying Trollocs, flaming arrows guiding his way in the darkness like a roadway. The Trollocs stood thick on either side, but those in front of him dropped and dropped until there were no more. "Thank you, Tam." Lan cantered his steed along the eastern slope of the heights, alone now, past the soldiers, past the shadow spawn. He was one with the breeze that streamed through his hair, one with the sinewy animal beneath him that carried him forward, one with the target that was his destination, his fate. Demandred stood at the sound of the hoofbeats, his Sharan companions rising in front of him. With a roar, Lan heeled Mandarb into the Sharans that blocked his path. The stallion leaped, front legs driving the guards before him into the ground. Mandarb wheeled around, his haunches knocking down more Sharans, his forelegs coming down on yet others. Lan threw himself from the saddle. Mandarb had no protection against channeling, and so to fight from horseback would be to invite Demandred to kill his mount, and hit the ground at a run, sword out.
"Another one!" Demandred roared. "Luz Theron, you are beginning to..."
He cut off as Lan reached him and flung himself into thistledown floats on the whirlwind, a tempestuous offensive sword form. Demandred whipped his sword up, catching the blow on his weapon and skidding backward a step at the force of it. They exchanged three blows, quick as cracks of lightning, Lan still in motion until the last blow caught Demandred on the cheek. Lan felt a slight tug, and blood sprayed into the air. Demandred felt at the wound in his cheek, and his eyes opened wider.
"Who are you?"
Demandred asked.
"I am the man who will kill you."
Min looked up from the back of her torm as it loped toward the gateway back to the battlefield at Merilor. She hoped it would withstand the battle frenzy when they got there. Bonfires and torches shone in the distance. Fireflies illuminating scenes of valor and determination. She watched the lights flicker, the last embers of a fire that would soon be extinguished. Rand trembled, distant, far to the north.
The pattern spun around Rand, forcing him to watch. He looked through eyes streaming with tears. He saw the people struggle. He saw them fall. He saw Elaine, captive and alone, a dreadlord preparing to rip their children from her womb. He saw Ruark, his mind forfeit, now a pawn of one of the Forsaken. He saw Matt, desperate, facing down horrible odds. He saw Lan riding to his death. Demandred's words dug at him. The Dark One's pressure continued to tear at him. Rand had failed. But in the back of his mind, a voice. Frail, almost forgotten. "Let go." Lan held nothing back. He did not fight as he had trained Rand to fight. No careful testing, no judging the terrain, no careful evaluation. Demandred could channel, and despite the medallion, Lan couldn't give his enemy time to think, time to weave and hurl rocks at him or open the ground beneath him. Lan burrowed deeply into the void, allowing instincts to guide him. He went beyond lack of emotions, burning away everything. He did not need to judge the terrain, for he felt the land as if it were part of him. He did not need to test Demandred's strength. One of the Forsaken, with many decades of experience, would be the most skilled swordsman Lan had ever faced. Lan was vaguely aware of the Sharans spreading out to make a broad circle around the two combatants as they fought. Apparently, Demandred was confident enough of his skills that he did not allow interference from others. Lan spun into a sequence of attacks. Water flows downhill became whirlwind on the mountain, which became hawk dives into the brush. His forms were like streams blending into a larger and larger river. Demandred fought as well as Lan had feared. Though the man's forms were slightly different from those Lan knew, the years had not changed the nature of a sword fight.
"You are good,"
Demandred said with a grunt, falling back before wind and rain, a line of blood dripping from his chin. Lan's sword flashed in the air, reflecting the red light of a bonfire nearby. Demandred came back with striking the spark, which Lan anticipated countering. He took a scratch along the side, but ignored it. The exchange set Lan back a step, and gave Demandred the chance to pick up a rock with the one power and hurl it at Lan. Deep within the void, Lan felt the stone coming. It was an understanding of the fight, one that ran deeply into him, to the very core of his soul. The way Demandred stepped, the direction his eyes flickered told Lan exactly what was coming. As he flowed into his next sword form, Lan brought his weapon up across his chest and stepped backward. A stone the size of a man's head passed directly in front of him. Lan flowed forward, arm moving into his next form as another stone flew under his arm, tugging wind with it. Lan raised his sword and flowed around the path of a third stone, which missed him by a thumb's width, rippling his clothing. Demandred blocked Lan's attack, but he breathed hoarsely.
"Who are you?"
Demandred whispered again.
"No one of this age has such skill. Asmodian? No, he couldn't have fought me like this. Luz Theron? It is you behind that mask, isn't it?" "I am just a man," Lan whispered. "That is all I have ever been."
Demandred growled, then launched an attack. Lan responded with stones falling down the mountain, but Demandred's fury forced him back a few steps. Despite Lan's initial offensive, Demandred was the better swordsman. Lan knew this by the same sense that told him when to strike, when to parry, when to step, and when to withdraw. Perhaps if they had come to the fight evenly, it would be different. They had not. Lan had been fighting for an entire day, and though he'd been healed from his worst wounds, the smaller ones still ached. Beyond that, a healing in and of itself was draining. Demandred was still fresh. The Forsaken stopped talking and engrossed himself in the duel. He also stopped using the one power, focused only on his sword play. He did not grin as he took the advantage. He did not seem like a man who grinned very often. Lan slipped away from Demandred, but the Forsaken pressed forward with boar rushes down the mountain, again pushing Lan back to the perimeter of the circle, battering at his defenses, cutting him on the arm, then the shoulder, then finally the thigh.
"I've only time for one last lesson."
"I have you," Demandred finally growled, breathing heavily.
"Whoever you are, I have you. You cannot win." "You didn't listen to me," Lan whispered. "One last lesson. The hardest."
Demandred struck, and Lan saw his opening. Lan lunged forward, placing Demandred's sword point against his own side and ramming himself forward onto it.
"I did not come here to win," Lan whispered, smiling. "I came here to kill you. Death is lighter than a feather."
Demandred's eyes opened wide and he tried to pull back. Too late. Lan's sword took him straight through the throat. The world grew dark as Lan slipped backward off the sword. He felt Nynaeve's fear and pain as he did, and he sent his love to her. Chapter 38. The Place That Was Not. Rand saw Lan fall, and it sent a spasm of anguish through him. The Dark One pressed in around Rand, swallowing him, shredding him. Fighting that attack was too hard. Rand was spent.
"Let go,"
his father's voice.
I have to save them,
Rand whispered.
Let them sacrifice. You can't do this yourself.
I have to. That's what it means.
The Dark One's destruction crawled on him like a thousand crows, picking at his flesh, pulling it from his bones. He could barely think through the pressure and the sense of loss. The death of Egwene and so many others.
Let go. It is their choice to make.
He wanted so badly to protect them, the people who believed in him. Their deaths and the danger they faced were an enormous weight upon him. How could a man just let go? Wasn't that letting go of responsibility? Or was it giving the responsibility to them? Rand squeezed his eyes shut, thinking of all those who had died for him, of Egwene, whom he had sworn to himself to protect.
You fool!
Her voice in his head, fond but sharp.
Egwene? Am I not allowed to be a hero, too?
It's not that.
You march to your death. Yet you forbid anyone else from doing so?
I...
Let go, Rand. Let us die for what we believe, and do not try to steal that from us. You have embraced your death. Embrace mine.
Tears leaked from the corners of his eyes.
I'm sorry,
he whispered.
Why?
I failed.
No. Not yet, you haven't.
The Dark One flayed him. He huddled before that vast nothingness, unable to move. He screamed in agony. And then he let go. He let go of the guilt. He let go of the shame for not having saved Egwene and all the others. He let go of the need to protect her, to protect all of them. He let them be heroes. Names streamed from his head. Egwene, Hurin, Bashir, Isan of the Chari-Nail, Samara, and thousands more. One by one, first slowly but with increasing speed, he counted backward through the list he had once maintained in his head. The list had once been only women, but had grown to include everyone he knew had died for him. He hadn't realized how large it had become, how much he had let himself carry. The names ripped from him like physical things, like doves aflight, and each one carried away a burden. Weight vanished from his shoulders. His breathing grew steadier. It was as if Perrin had come with his hammer and shattered a thousand chains that had been dragging behind Rand.
Ilyena was last. We are reborn, Rand thought, so we can do better the next time. So do better.
He opened his eyes and placed his hand before him, palm against blackness that felt solid. His self, that had fuzzed, becoming indistinct as the Dark One ripped at it, pulled together. He placed his other arm down, then heaved himself to his knees. And then, Randall Thor, the Dragon Reborn, stood up once again to face the shadow.
No! No! The beautiful Shendla whispered, looking down at Demondred's body. Her heart sank down inside of her, and she tore at her hair with both hands, her body swaying. As she gazed on her beloved, Shendla slowly drew breath deep into her chest, and when it released, it was a fearful shriek. Bow the Wild is dead! The entire battlefield seemed to grow still.
Rand faced the Dark One in that place that was not, surrounded by all time and nothing at the same time. His body still stood in the cave of Shale Ghul, locked into that moment of battle against Moradin, but his soul was here. He existed in this place that was not, this place outside of the pattern, this place where evil was born. He looked into it, and he knew it. The Dark One was not a being, but a force, an essence as wide as the universe itself, which Rand could now see in complete detail. Planets, stars in their multitudes, like the motes above a bonfire. The Dark One still strove to destroy him. Rand felt strong despite the attacks. Relaxed. Complete. With his burdens gone, he could fight again. He held himself together. It was difficult, but he was victorious. Rand stepped forward. The darkness shuddered. It quivered, vibrated as if disbelieving.
I destroy them.
The Dark One was not a being. It was the darkness between. Between lights, between moments, between eye blinks.
All is mine this time. It was ever meant to be. It will ever be.
Rand saluted those who died. The blood running across rocks, the weeping of those who witnessed others fall. The shadow threw all of it at Rand, intent on Rand's destruction. But it did not destroy him.
We will never give in,
Rand whispered.
I will never give in.
The vast shadow thundered and shook. It sent jolts through and across the world. The ground rent, the laws of nature fractured. Swords turned against their owners, food spoiled, rock turned to mud. It came upon Rand again, the force of nothingness itself trying to pull him apart. The strength of the attack did not lessen. And yet, suddenly, it felt like an idle buzzing. They would not give up. It wasn't just about Rand. All of them would keep fighting. The Dark One's attacks lost meaning. If they could not make him yield, if they could not make him relent, then what were they? Within the tempest, Rand sought the void as Tam had taught him. All emotion, all worry, all pain. He took it and fed it into the flame of a single candle. He felt peace. The peace of a single drop of water hitting a pond. The peace of moments. The peace between eye blinks. The peace of the void.
I will not give up, he repeated.
And the words seemed a wonder to him.
I control them all. I break them before me. You have lost, child of humankind.
If you think that, Rand whispered into the darkness, then it is because you cannot see. Loyal was panting hard when he returned to the northern end of the heights. He gave the news to Matt about how Lan had fought so bravely before he went down, taking Demendred with him. Loyal's report affected Matt deeply, as it did all members of his army. Particularly the Borderlanders who had lost a king, a brother. There was a disturbance among the Sharans as well. Somehow news of Demendred's death was already percolating through their ranks. Matt forced down his grief. That wasn't what Lan would have wanted. Instead, Matt raised his Ashandarai.
Tyshar Malkir!
He screamed with all the force he could.
Lanman Dragorin, you bloody wonderful man! You did it!
His shouts rang in the silence as he charged toward the shadow armies. Shouts rang behind him.
Tyshar Malkir!
Shouts from all nationalities, all peoples, borderlanders and not. They surged across the heights alongside Matt. Together they attacked the stunned foe. Chapter 39. Those Who Fight.
You cannot fathom it, can you? Rand demanded of the darkness. It is beyond you. You break us and still we fight. Why? Haven't you killed us? Haven't you ruined us?
You, the Dark One replied. I have you.
Rand stepped forward. In this place of nothing, the pattern seemed to swirl around him like a tapestry.
Here is your flaw, Shaitan, Lord of the Dark. Lord of envy, Lord of nothing, here is why you fail. It was not about me. It's never been about me.
It was about a woman, torn and beaten down, cast from her throne and made a puppet. A woman who had crawled when she had to. That woman still fought. It was about a man that love repeatedly forsook. A man who found relevance in a world that others would have let pass them by. A man who remembered stories and who took fool boys under his wing when the smarter move would have been to keep on walking. That man still fought. It was about a woman with a secret, a hope for the future. A woman who had hunted the truth before others could. A woman who had given her life, then had it returned. That woman still fought. It was about a man whose family was taken from him, but who stood tall in his sorrow and protected those he could. It was about a woman who refused to believe that she could not help, could not heal those who had been harmed. It was about a hero who insisted with every breath that he was anything but a hero. It was about a woman who would not bend her back while she was beaten, and who shone with the light for all who watched, including Rand. It was about them all. He saw this over and over in the pattern arrayed about him. Rand walked through eons and ages, his hand passing through ribbons of the pattern's light. "Here is the truth, Shaitan," Rand said, taking another step forward, arms out, woven patterns spreading around them. "You cannot win unless we give up. That's it, isn't it? This fight isn't about a victory in battle. Taking me, it was never about beating me. It was about breaking me. That's what you've tried to do with all of us. It's why at times you tried to have us killed, while other times you didn't seem to care. You win when you break us. But you haven't. You can't." The darkness trembled. The nothingness shook, as if the arches of the heavens themselves were cracking. The Dark One's shout was defiant. Within the void, Rand continued forward and the darkness trembled.
"I can still kill," the Dark One bellowed. "I can still take them all. I am Lord of the Grave, the Battle Lord. He is mine. All are mine, eventually."
Rand stepped forward, hand stretched out. In his palm sat the world, and upon that world a continent, and upon that continent a battlefield. And upon that battlefield, two bodies on the ground. Matt fought, Tam at his side with sword out. Kareed and the Death Watch Guard joined them, then Loyal and the Ogier. The armies of a dozen nations and people fought, many joining him as he rushed across the plateau. They were outnumbered 3-1. Matt fought, bellowing in the old tongue.
"For the light! For honor! For glory! For life itself!"
He slew one Trolloc, then another. Half a dozen in moments, but he felt he was fighting with the surf itself. Wherever he struck down blackness, more took its place. Trollocs moving in the shadows, lit only by the occasional lantern or burning arrow stuck in the ground. The Trollocs didn't fight as one. "We can break them," Matt thought. "We have to break them." This was his chance. Push now, while the Sharans were dazed at Demendred's fall.
"The Son of Battles. I will take him. I will take them all, adversary. As I took the King of Nothing."
Blood and bloody ashes. What was that nothingness in his head? Matt beheaded a Trolloc, then wiped his brow, Kareed and the Death Watch guards covering him for a moment. Matt could feel the battlefield in the night. There were a lot of Trollocs and Sharans, so many of them.
"There are too many," Arganda called from nearby. "Light, they'll overwhelm us. We need to fall back. Cawthon, can you hear me?"
"I can do this," Matt thought. "I can win this battle." An army could defeat superior numbers, but Matt needed momentum, an opening, a favorable toss of the dice. Rand stood above the pattern and looked down at the fallen men in a land where hope seemed to have died. "You have not been watching closely enough. About one thing you are wrong.
so very wrong.
Cornered and alone, a boy huddled in a cleft in the rock. Horrors with knives and fangs, the shadow itself made flesh, dug at his hiding place, reaching with nails like knives and ripping his skin. Terrified, crying, bloodied, the boy raised a golden horn to his lips. Matt squinted, the battle seeming to dim around him.
"So very wrong, Shaitan,"
Rand's voice whispered in Matt's mind. Then the voice was no longer in Matt's mind. It could be heard distinctly by everyone on the battlefield.
"That one you have tried to kill many times," Rand said. "That one who lost his kingdom. That one from whom you took everything."
Lurching, bloodied from the sword strike to his side, the last king of the Malkieri stumbled to his feet. Lan thrust his hand into the air, holding by its hair the head of Demandred, general of the Shadow's armies.
"That man," Rand shouted, "that man still fights."
Matt felt the battlefield grow still. All were frozen in place. At that moment, there rang out a soft but powerful sound, a clear note, golden. One long tone that encompassed everything. The sound of a horn, pure and beautiful. Matt had heard that sound once before.
Melar knelt beside Elaine, pressing the medallion against her head to stop her from channeling.
"This could have gone in a very different way, my queen," he said. "You should have been more accommodating."
Light, that leer was an awful thing. He had gagged her, of course, but she did not give him the satisfaction of crying. She would find a way to escape this. She had to shake free of the medallion. Of course, if she did, there was still the channeler. But if she could evade the medallion, then strike quickly.
"Pity that your little captain general isn't alive to watch," Melar said. "Fool that she was. I really do think she believed that she was Birgitta from the legends."
Elaine heard a soft sound in the distance. The ground vibrated. An earthquake. She tried to concentrate, but she could only think that Birgitta had been right all along. It was fully possible for the babes to be safe, as Min had foretold, while Elaine herself was left dead. White mist climbed up from the ground around them, like the souls of the dead, curling. Melar stiffened suddenly. Elaine blinked, looking up at him. Something silvery jutted from the front of Melar's chest. It looked like an arrowhead. Melar turned, knife dropping from his fingers. Behind him, Birgitta Silverbow stood over her corpse, one foot to either side of the headless body. She raised a bow, bright as newly polished silver, and released another arrow, which seemed to trail light as it struck Melar in the head and pitched him to the ground. Her next shot took Melar's channeler, killing the Dreadlord with a silver arrow before the man could respond. All around them, Melar's men stood as if paralyzed, gaping at Birgitta. The clothing she now wore seemed to glow. A short white coat, a voluminous pair of pale yellow trousers and a dark cloak. Her long golden hair hung in an intricate braid, down to her waist.
"I am Birgitta Silverbow," Birgitta announced, as if to dispel doubt. "The horn of Valir has sounded, calling all to the last battle. The heroes have returned."
Lanman Dragorin held aloft the head of one of the Forsaken, their battle commander, supposedly invincible. The Shadow's army could not ignore what had happened. None of them, wherever they were on the battlefield. The voice that had come out of nowhere had proclaimed it. That the attacker should stand while the Chosen lay dead, it stunned them, frightened them. And then the horn sounded in the distance.
"Press forward,"
Matt yelled.
"Press forward."
His army threw themselves ferociously onto the Trollocs and Sharans.
Cawthon, what was that sound?
Arganda demanded, stumbling up beside Pips. The man still had one arm in a sling and carried a bloodied mace in the other hand. Around Matt, the Death Watch guard fought and grunted, cutting down Trollocs. Matt yelled, throwing himself into the fight.
That was the bloody horn of Valir! We can still win this night!
The horn. How had the bloody horn been sounded? Well, it looked like Matt wasn't tied to the thing any longer. His death at Roydion must have broken him from it. Some other unlucky fool could bear that burden now. Matt howled a battle cry, shearing the arm off a Trolloc, then stabbing it through the chest. The Shadow's entire army became disoriented at the sound of the horn. Those Trollocs nearest Lan scrambled back, clawing over one another in desperate urgency to escape him. That left the Trollocs fighting along the slope spread thin, without reserves, and nobody seemed to be in charge. Murdrol nearby raised swords against their own Trollocs, trying to get those that were fleeing to turn back and fight. But flaming arrows, shot by the Two Rivers archers, fell from the sky and riddled the Fade's bodies. Tamhal Thor, Matt thought, I am going to bloody send you the best pair of boots. Light burn me, but I will.
To me, Matt shouted. All riders that can hold a flaming weapon, to me!
Matt kicked Pips into a gallop, shoving his way through Trollocs that were still fighting. Matt's attack opened the way for Furic Kareed and his few remaining men to punch the hole in the horde of Trollocs wider. Following that, the full force of the remaining Borderlanders poured through after Matt toward Lan. The Sharan army showed signs of weakening, but they continued their offensive, their discipline forcing them to do what their hearts were calling them to end. Lan's victory wouldn't win the battle outright. There were far too many enemies. But without Demandred, the Shadow had lost direction. Even the Fades were showing the lack of a leader. The Trollocs began to fall back and regroup. Matt and the Borderlanders galloped southwest across the heights and came to where Lan was standing. Matt jumped from his horse and grabbed Lan by the shoulder as the Melchiori King faltered. Lan looked at Matt with grim thanks, and then his eyes rolled back in his head and he started to fall, dropping Demandred's head to the ground. A man in a black coat rode over. Matt hadn't realized that Narishma was still there, fighting alongside the Borderlanders. The Kandori Ashaman threw himself off his horse and took Lan by the other arm, then concentrated. The brief healing was enough to bring Lan back to consciousness.
"Get him on a horse, Narishma," Matt said. "You can work on him more when we get back to our army. I don't want to be stuck behind enemy lines if those Trollocs below decide to come back up the heights."
They rode back northeast, laying into the back of the Trolloc's right flank with swords and lances as they swept past, which unsettled the beasts even more. Once past, the Borderlanders swung their mounts around and charged directly into the Trolloc hordes again, who were looking around in all directions, not sure where the next attack would be coming from. Matt and Narishma continued to ride toward their own back lines, with Lan in tow. Narishma eased the Melchiori off his horse and had him lie on the ground to continue the healing, while Matt paused to consider their situation. Behind them, mist gathered. Matt was struck with a terrible thought. He had ignored a terrible possibility. The Horn of Valir still called, a distant yet unmistakable sound. Oh, light, Matt thought. Oh, bloody stumps on a battlefield! Who blew it? Which side? The fog formed, like worms crawling out of the ground after a rainstorm. It gathered into a billowing cloud, a thunderhead on the ground, and shapes on horses charged out of it. Figures of legend. Buad, of Albhain, as regal as any queen. Amoresu, holding aloft her glowing sword. Hend, the striker, dark-skinned, a hammer in one hand and a spike in the other. A figure rode through the mists at the front of the heroes. Tall and imperious, with a nose like a beak, Arthur Hawkwing carried justice, his sword on his shoulder as he rode. Though the rest of the 100-odd heroes followed Hawkwing, one broke off in a streak of mist, galloping away. Matt didn't get a good look at the rider. Who had it been, and where was he going so quickly? Matt pulled his hat on tighter, nudging Pips forward to meet the ancient king. I suppose I'll know which side summoned him, Matt thought, if he tries to kill me. Matt lifted the Ashindarai across his saddle. Could he fight Arthur Hawkwing? Light could anyone beat one of the heroes of the Horn. Hello, Hawkwing, Matt called.
Gambler, Hawkwing replied. Do take better care of what has been allotted you. Almost I worried we would not be summoned for this fight.
Matt let out a relaxing breath.
Bloody ashes, Hawkwing. You needn't have drawn it out like that, you bloody goat-kisser. So you fight for us?
Of course we fight for the light, Hawkwing said. We would never fight for the shadow.
But I was told,
Matt began.
You were told wrong, Hawkwing said. Besides, Hend said, laughing, if the other side had been able to summon us, you'd be dead by now.
I did die, Matt said, rubbing at the scar on his neck. Apparently that tree claimed me.
Not the tree, gambler, Hawkwing said. Another moment, one that you cannot remember. It is fitting, as Luce Theron did save your life both times.
Remember him, Amoresu snapped. I have seen you murmur that you fear his madness, but all the while you forget that every breath you breathe, every step you take, comes at his forbearance. Your life is a gift from the Dragon Reborn, gambler. Twice over.
Blood and bloody ashes. Even dead women treated him the way Nynaeve did. Where did they learn it? Were there secret lessons?
Hawkwing nodded toward something nearby. Rand's banner. Danil still held it aloft.
We arrive here together at the banner. We can fight for you because of it, gambler, and because the dragon leads you, though he does it from afar. It is enough.
Well, Matt said, looking at the banner, I guess since you're here, you can fight the battle now. I'll pull my men back.
Hawkwing laughed.
You think we 100 can fight this entire battle?
You're the bloody heroes of the Horn, Matt said. That's what you do, isn't it?
We can be defeated,
said pretty Blaze of Matuchin, dancing her horse to the side of Hawkwing's. Tuon couldn't be mad if he looked a little at a hero, right? People were supposed to stare at them.
If we are wounded in dire ways, we will have to withdraw and recover in the world of dreams.
The Shadow knows how to incapacitate us, Hend added. Bind us hand and foot and we can do nothing to aid the battle. It doesn't matter if one is immortal when one cannot move. We can fight well, Hawkwing said to Matt, and we will lend you our strength. This is not our war alone. We are just one part of it.
Bloody wonderful, Matt said. That horn was still sounding. Then tell me this. If I didn't blow that thing, and the shadow didn't do it, who did?
Thick trollic nails scored Alvar's arm. He kept blowing the horn through his tears, eyes squeezed shut in the small cleft in the rocky outcrop.
I'm sorry, Matt, he thought as a dark-haired hand scrabbled for a hold on the horn.
Another grabbed him by the shoulder, nails digging deeply, making blood pulse down his arm. The horn was ripped from his hands.
I'm sorry.
The trollic yanked Alvar upward, then dropped him. Alvar tumbled to the ground, dazed, and then jumped as the horn fell into his lap. He grabbed it, shaking and blinking away his tears. Shadows churned above, grunting. What was happening? Cautiously, Alvar raised his head and found someone standing above, one foot planted on either side of him. The figure fought in a blur, facing down a dozen trollocs at once, his staff whirling this way and that as he defended the boy. Alvar caught sight of the man's face and his breath caught.
Noel?
Noel clubbed a trollic arm, forcing the creature back, then glanced at Alvar and smiled. Though Noel still appeared aged, the weariness was gone from his eyes, as if a great burden had been lifted from him. A white horse stood nearby with a golden saddle and reins, the most magnificent animal that Alvar had ever seen.
Noel! They said you died, Alver cried.
I did,
Noel said, then laughed.
The pattern was not finished with me, son. Sound that horn! Sound it proudly, horn sounder!
Alver did so, blowing the horn as Noel fought the Trollocs back in a small circle around Alver. Noel. Noel was one of the heroes of the horn. The hooves of galloping horses announced others, come to rescue Alver from the Shadow Spawn. Suddenly, Alver felt a deep warmth. He had lost so many people, but one of them, one, had come back for him.
Chapter 40 Wolf Brother. Elaine's captors looked at Birgitta stunned, and Elaine took the moment to jerk her body sideways. She rolled to her knees. Her pregnancy made her awkward, but she was hardly incapable. The medallion that Melar had been holding against her slipped to the ground, and she found the glow of Sidar awaiting her grasp. She filled herself with the power and held her belly. Her children stirred within. Elaine wove flows of air, knocking her captors backward. Nearby, Elaine's guards, having rallied, burst through Melar's soldiers. A few stopped when they saw Birgitta.
"Keep fighting, you daughters and sons of goats!" Birgitta yelled, loosing arrows at the mercenaries. "I might be dead, but I'm still your bloody commander, and you will obey orders!"
That spurred them into motion. The rising mist curled upward, fogging the battlefield. It seemed to glow faintly in the darkness. In moments, Elaine's channeling, Birgitta's bow, and her guard's work sent the remnants of Melar's dark friend mercenaries running. Birgitta dropped six of them with arrows as they fled.
"Birgitta," Elaine said through tears. "I'm sorry."
"Sorry?"
Birgitta turned to her.
"Sorry? Why do you mourn, Elaine? I have it all back. My memory has returned."
She laughed.
"It is wonderful. I don't know how you stood me these last few weeks. I moped worse than a child who'd just broken her favorite bow."
Oh, light.
Elaine's insides told her she'd still lost her warder, and the pain of the bond breaking was not a rational thing. It didn't matter that Birgitta stood before her.
"Perhaps I should bond you again?"
"It would not work,"
Birgitta said, waving her hand with a dismissive gesture. "Are you hurt?"
"Nothing but my pride."
"Lucky for you, but luckier that the horn was blown when it was."
Elaine nodded.
"I'm going to join the other heroes," Birgitta said. "You stay here and recover."
"Light burn that," Elaine said, forcing herself to her feet. "I'm not bloody staying behind now. The babes are all right. I'm riding."
"Elaine?"
"My soldiers think I'm dead," Elaine said. "Our lines are breaking, our men dying. They have to see me to know that there is still hope. They won't know what this mist means. If they have ever needed their queen, this is the moment. Nothing short of the Dark One could stop me from returning now."
Birgitta frowned.
"You're not my warder any longer," Elaine said. "But you're still my friend. Will you ride with me?"
"Stubborn fool.
I'm not the one who just refused to stay dead."
"Together?"
"Together,"
Birgitta said, nodding. Avienda pulled up short, listening to new howls. Those didn't sound quite like wolves. The tempest at Shale Ghoul continued. She didn't know which side was winning. Everywhere lay bodies, some ripped apart by wolves, others still smoldering from attacks of the One Power. The storm winds whipped and raged, though no rain fell, and waves of dust and gravel washed across her. She could feel channeling from the Pit of Doom, but it was like a quiet pulse, as opposed to the storm that had been the cleansing. Rand. Was he all right? What was happening? The white clouds brought in by the Windfinders churned among the jet-black storm clouds above. swirling together in a massive, writhing pattern above the mountain peak. From what she'd heard of the Windfinders, they had withdrawn up Shale Ghoul to a ledge, far above the cave entrance, still working the bowl of winds. They were at a breaking point. More than two-thirds of their numbers had collapsed from exhaustion. Soon the storm would consume everything. Avienda prowled through the maelstrom, seeking the source of those howls. She didn't have any other channelers with whom to link, now that Rafaela had left to join the Dragonsworn's last stand at the cavern. Out here in the valley, different groups killed one another, shifting back and forth. Maidens, wise ones, Siswiamen, Trollocs, Fades, and Wolves. Hundreds of them had joined the battle so far. There were also some Demani, Tyrans, and Dragonsworn, though most of those fought near the path up to Rand. Something hit the ground beside her, crooning, and she lashed out before thinking. The Drakkar burst into flames like a stick dried by 100 days of sunlight. She took a deep breath, looking around her. Howls! Hundreds upon hundreds of them. She broke into a run toward those howls crossing the valley floor. As she did so, someone emerged from the dusty shadows. A wiry man with a gray beard and golden eyes. He was accompanied by a small pack of wolves. They glanced at her, then turned back in the direction they'd been going. Avienda stopped. Golden eyes. "Ho, he who runs with wolves," she called at the man. "Have you brought Perinabara with you?" The man froze. He acted like a wolf, careful yet dangerous. "I know of Perinabara," he called back, "but he is not with me. He hunts in another place." Avienda walked closer to the man. He watched her, wary, and several of his wolves growled. It did not seem they trusted her or her kind much more than they trusted Trollocs. "These new howls," she called over the wind. "They are from your friends?" "No," the man said, eyes growing distant. "No, not any longer. If you know of women who can channel Aiel, you should bring them now." He moved off toward the sounds, his pack running with them. Avienda followed him, keeping her distance from those wolves, but trusting their senses above her own. They reached a small rise in the floor of the valley, one that she'd seen Iteraldi use on occasion for overseeing the defense of the pass. Pouring out of the pass were scores of dark shapes. Black wolves, the size of small horses. They loped across the rock, and though they were out of her sight, Avienda knew they were leaving footprints melted into the stone. Hundreds of wolves attacked the darker shapes, leaping on their backs but were thrown free. They didn't seem to be doing much good. The man with the wolves growled. "Dark hounds?" Avienda shouted. "Yes," he called back, bellowing to be heard over the tempest. "This is the Wild Hunt, the worst of their kind. These cannot fall to mortal weapons. The bites of common wolves will not harm them. Not permanently." "Then why do they fight?" The wolf brother laughed. "Why do any of us fight? Because we must try to win somehow. Go! Bring Aes Sedai, some of those Ashaman if you can find them. These creatures will roll over your armies as easily as a wave over pebbles." The man took off down the slope, his wolves joining him. She understood why they fought. They might not be able to kill the Dark Hounds, but they could slow the creatures, and that was their victory here, buying Rand enough time to do what he needed to. She turned, alarmed, running to gather the others. The sensation of a powerful channeler wielding Sidar nearby stopped her dead. She spun, looking toward the source of the sensation. Grendahl was there, up ahead, just barely visible. She calmly sent deadly weaves at a line of defenders of the stone. She had collected a small group of women, Aes Sedai, wise ones, and a few guards. The women knelt around her and had to be feeding her their power, considering the strength of the weeds she unleashed. Her guards were 4 Aiel men with black veils, not red, under compulsion for certain. Avienda hesitated, wavering. What if the Dark Hounds? I have to take this chance, she thought. She wove, releasing a ray of blue light into the sky, the sign she, Amis, and Cadswain had agreed upon. That, of course, alerted Grendal. The Forsaken spun on Avienda and lashed out with fire. Avienda dodged, rolling. A shield came next, trying to cut Avienda off from the source. She desperately pulled in as much of the one power as she could hold, drawing it through the turtle brooch. Cutting a woman off with a shield was like trying to snip a rope with shears. The thicker the rope, the more difficult it was to cut. In this case, Avienda had taken in enough Sidar to rebuff the shield. She gritted her teeth, spinning weaves of her own. Light, she hadn't realized how tired she was. She almost slipped, the threads of the one power threatening to drift from her control. She drove them into place by force of will, and released a weave of air and fire, although she knew that those captives included friends and allies. They would rather die than be used by the shadow, she told herself, as she dodged another attack. The ground exploded around her and she dove to the ground. No, keep moving! Avienda leaped to her feet and ran. That saved her life, as lightning began to rain down behind her, its might sprawling her to the ground again. She came up bleeding from several cuts on her arm and started making weaves. She had to drop them as a complex weave came near her. Compulsion. If that seized her, Avienda would become another of the woman's thralls, forced to lend her strength to overthrowing the light. Avienda wove earth into the ground in front of her, throwing up chips of rock, dust, smoke. Then she rolled away, seeking a hollow in the ground, peeking out carefully. She held her breath and did not channel. The whipping winds cleared the diversion she'd created. Grendal hesitated in the middle of the field. She could not sense Avienda, who had earlier placed upon herself the weave that masked her ability. If she channeled, Grendal would know. But if she did not, she would be safe. Grendal's Aiel thralls stalked outward, their veils up, searching for Avienda. Avienda was tempted to channel right then and there, to end their lives. Any Aiel she knew would thank her for that. She stayed her hand. She didn't want to give herself away. Grendal was too strong. She could not face the woman alone. But if she waited... A weave of air and spirit attacked Grendal, trying to cut her off from the source. The woman cursed, spinning. Cadswain and Amis had arrived.
Stand! Stand for Andor and the Queen!
Elaine galloped through groups of pikemen now in disarray, her hair streaming behind her, shouting with a power-aided voice. She held aloft a sword, though the light only knew what she would do with it if she had to swing it. Men turned as she passed. Some were cut down by Trollocs as they did so. The beasts were pushing through the defenses, reveling in the broken lines and the slaughter.
My men are too far gone, Elaine thought.
Oh, light! My poor soldiers!
The tale she saw was one of death and despair. The Andoran and Kyrian in pike formations had folded after taking horrible casualties. Now men held in little bunches, many scattering, scrambling for their lives.
Stand! Elaine cried. Stand with your queen!
More men stopped running, but they didn't go back to the fighting. What to do? Fight. Elaine attacked a Trolloc. She used the sword, despite just moments ago thinking that she'd be hopeless with it. She was. The boar-headed Trolloc actually looked surprised as she flailed at it. Fortunately, Birgitta was there and shot the beast in the forearm as it swung for Elaine. That saved her life, but still didn't let her kill the blasted thing. Her mount, borrowed from one of her guardsmen, danced around, keeping the Trolloc from cutting her down as she tried to stab it. Her sword didn't move in the direction she willed, The One Power was far more refined a weapon. She would use that if she had to, but she would rather fight for the moment. She didn't have to struggle long. Soldiers surrounded her, dispatching the beast and defending her from four others that had begun advancing on her. Elaine wiped her brow and pulled back. "What was that?" Birgitta asked, riding up beside her, then loosing an arrow at a Trolloc before it could kill one of the soldiers. "Ratliff's nails, Elaine! I thought I'd seen the extent of your foolishness." Elaine held up her sword. Nearby, men began to cry out. "The Queen lives!" they yelled. "For Light and Andor! Stand with the Queen!"
"How would you feel?" Elaine said softly. "If you saw your queen trying to kill a Trolloc with a sword as you ran away."
"I'd feel like I needed to bloody move to another country," Birgitta snapped, loosing another arrow. "One where the monarchs don't have pudding for brains." Elaine sniffed. Birgitta could say what she wished, but the maneuver worked. Like a bit of yeast, the force of men she'd gathered grew, expanding to either side of her and building a battle line. She kept the sword raised high, shouting, and after a moment of indecision, created a weave that made a majestic banner of Andor float in the air above her, the Red Lion to light the night. That would draw direct fire from Demondred and his channelers, but the men needed the beacon. She would fight off attacks as they came. They did not, as she rode down the battle lines, shouting words that gave hope to her men.
"For Light and Andor! Your queen lives! Stand and fight!"
Matt thundered forward across the top of the heights with the remains of a once great army pushing southwest. The Trollocs were massed ahead on his left side, the Sharn army ahead on the right. Facing the enemy were the heroes, Borderlanders, Kharid and his men, Ogier, Two Rivers archers, White Cloaks, Gil'danan and Mayenners, mercenaries, Tinna and her dragonsworn refugees. And the band of the Red Hand. His own men. He remembered, within those memories that were not his, leading forces far grander. Armies that were not fragmented, half-trained, wounded, and exhausted. But Light help him, he had never been so proud. Despite all that had happened, his men took up the shouts of attack and threw themselves into the battle with renewed vigor. Demondred's death gave Matt a chance. He felt the armies surging, and through them flowed that instinctive rhythm of the battle. This was the moment he had been seeking. It was the card upon which to bet everything he had. 10-1 odds, still, but the Sharn army, the Trollocs and Fades had no head, no general to guide them. Different contingents took conflicting actions as various Fades or Dreadlords tried to give orders. "I'll have to watch those Sharans," Matt thought. "They'll have generals who can reinstitute command." For now, he needed to hit hard, hit powerfully. Push the Trollocs and Sharans off the heights. Down below, the Trollocs filled the corridor between the bogs and the heights, pressing hard the defenders at the riverbed. Elaine's death had been a lie. Her troops had been in disarray. They had lost more than a third of their soldiers. But just as they were about to be routed by the Trollocs, she rode into their midst and rallied them. Now they were miraculously holding their lines despite being pushed back well into Shinaran territory. They could not resist much longer, though. With or without Elaine. More and more pikes on the front lines were being mobbed. Soldiers were falling all across the field, and her cavalries and the Aiel were working furiously, with increasing difficulty, to contain the enemy. "Light, if I can push the shadow off these bloody heights into those beasts below, they'll fall all over each other."
"Lord Cawthon!"
Tinna shouted nearby. She leveled a bloody spear from horseback, pointing to the south. Light shone distantly toward the River Arranin. Matt wiped his brow. Was that? Gateways in the sky. Dozens of them. And through them poured Tohrakan in flight, carrying lanterns. A fiery flight of arrows launched at the Trollocs in the corridor.
The Tauroken, carrying archers, flew in formation over the ford and the corridor beyond. Over the battle, Matt heard sounds that must have made the enemy's blood run cold. Hundreds, maybe thousands, of animal horns blared out in the night their call to war. A thunderstorm of drums began to beat out a unified cadence that became louder and louder, and a rumble of footfalls made by an advancing army, man and animal alike, slowly approaching Polov Heights in the dark. No one could see them in the pre-dawn blackness, but everyone on the battlefield knew who they were. Matt let out a whoop of joy. He could see the Shanchan movements playing out in his mind's eye now. Half their army would march directly north from the Aranin, joining with Elaine's harried army at the Mora to crush the Trollocs trying to force their way into Shinar. The other half would swing to the west around the bogs to the western side of the heights, crushing the Trollocs in the corridor from behind. Now the falling hail of arrows was accompanied by glowing lights popping into existence in the air. Demani, making more light for their army to see by, a display that would have done the Illuminators proud. Indeed, the ground shook as the massive Shanchan army marched across the field of Maralor. Thunder shattered the air off Matt's right flank on the heights. A deeper thunder. Talmanis and Aludra had mended the dragons and were firing directly from the cavern through gateways into the Sharan army. The pieces were almost all in place. There was one more bit of business that needed tending to before the final toss of the dice. Matt's armies pressed forward. Jer Grady fingered the letter from his wife, sent with Androl from the Black Tower. He couldn't read it in this darkness, but that didn't matter, so long as he could hold it. He'd memorized the words anyway. He watched this canyon 10 or so miles to the northeast along the River Mora, where Cawthon had positioned him. He was well out of sight of the battlefield at Maralor. He didn't fight. Light it was hard, but he didn't fight. He watched, trying not to think of the poor people who had died trying to hold the river here. It was the perfect place for it. The Mora passed through a canyon here, where the shadow could stop the river. And so it had. Though the men Matt had sent had tried to fight the Dreadlords and the Sharans. What a fool's task that had been. Grady's anger smoldered at Cawthon. Everyone claimed that he was a good general. Then he went and did this. Well, if he was a genius, why had he sent 500 simple folk from a mountain village in Murindi to hold this river? Yes, Cawthon had also sent about 100 soldiers from the band, but that wasn't nearly enough. They died after holding the river for a few hours. There were hundreds upon hundreds of Trollocs and several Dreadlords at the River Canyon. Well, those folk had been slaughtered to a man. Light. There had been children in that group. The townsfolk and the few soldiers had fought well, defending the canyon for far longer than Grady would have thought possible. But then they'd fallen, and he'd been ordered not to help them. Well, now Grady waited in the darkness atop the canyon walls, hiding among a cluster of rocks. Distant from him, perhaps 100 paces, Trollocs moved by torchlight. The Dreadlords needed that to see. They, too, were atop the canyon walls, which gave them the height and position to look down on the river below, which had become a lake. The three Dreadlords had broken up large chunks of the canyon walls and created the barrier of rock that dammed the river. That had dried out the Mora at Maralor and let the Trollocs cross the river with ease. Grady could open that dam in a moment. A strike with the One Power would open it up and release the water from the canyon. So far, he hadn't dared. Cawthon had ordered him not to attack, but beyond that, he'd never be able to defeat 3 strong Dreadlords on his own. They'd kill him and dam the river again. He caressed his wife's letter, then prepared himself. Cawthon had ordered him to make a gateway at dawn to that same village. Doing so would reveal Grady. He didn't know the purpose of the order. The basin below was filled with water, covering the bodies of the fallen. I guess now we'll do as well as any time, Grady thought, taking a deep breath. Dawn should be almost here, though the cloud cover kept the land dark. He'd follow his orders, like Burnham, but he would. But if Cawthon survived the battle downriver, he and Grady would have words. Stern ones. A man like Cawthon, born of ordinary folk, should have known better than to throw away lives. He took another deep breath, then began to weave a gateway. He opened it at that village the people had come from yesterday. He didn't know why he was to do this. The village had been depopulated to make up the group that had fought earlier. He doubted anybody remained. What had Matt called it? Hinder's Tap? People roared through the gateway, yelling, holding aloft cleavers, pitchforks, rusty swords. With them came more soldiers of the band, like the 100 who had fought here before, except by the light of the Dreadlord's fires, the faces of those soldiers were the same as the ones who had fought here before. Fought here and died. Grady gaped as he stood up in the darkness watching those people attack. They were all the same. The same matrons, the same farriers and blacksmiths, the very same people. He'd watched them die, and now they were back again. The Trollocs probably couldn't tell one human from another, but the Dreadlords saw it, and understood that these people were the same people. Those three Dreadlords seemed stunned. One of the Dreadlords yelled out about the Dark Lord abandoning them. He started flinging weaves at the people. Those people just charged on, heedless of the danger, as many of their number were blown apart. They fell on the Dreadlords, hacking at them with farming implements and kitchen knives. By the time the Trollocs attacked, the Dreadlords were down. Now he could... Shaking off his stupor, Grady gathered his power and destroyed the dam blocking the canyon. And in doing so, he released the river.
Chapter 41.